Many people have a desire to enter the world of investing, whether it be through real estate, stocks, or entrepreneurship. However, people often face self-doubt, a limited belief system, or simply a lack of knowledge to put behind their ambition. It's easier than you think to overcome these obstacles if you know exactly what's holding you back. Partner with Andre to forge new neurological pathways that unlock breakthrough strategies for income generation, reshape your belief systems, and construct your desired life. With over 15 years of experience in finance and a decade devoted to teaching wealth preservation, these achievements are no mere coincidence. One thing is clear, if others have done it, you can too. Start your complimentary action plan today at www.andrestewartauthor.com. Welcome to the Investing Uncensored podcast. If you've been searching for ways to break free from the 9-to-5 grind, scale or start your own business, generate passive income, or gain insights from others who have achieved their desired lifestyle, get ready. Prepare to be inspired as we provide you with invaluable tips, resources, and firsthand experiences from Andre and other industry experts who have accomplished remarkable things in their respective fields. This is the Investing Uncensored podcast, your roadmap to success. And now here's your host, Andre Stewart.
Welcome to Investing Uncensored. I'm your host, Andre Stewart. And today we're bringing you guys a great guest, Mark Capelman. How are you doing?
Doing really well. Thanks for having me on, Andre.
Mark has a good background. He has a mix of being an accountant in real estate, which he'll get into, elaborate on that a little bit more. And then he also has a background. He built his own real estate portfolio that he currently has as well. So we're going to get into that. He has an interesting background. He's in Chicago right now. Tell us a little bit about this REA logo right here. We talked about it earlier, but what is that?
Yeah. So REA, in short for real estate accounting, kind of the name says it all. All we do is real estate accounting. So we are outsourced accountants, outsourced bookkeepers for the property management industry. All we do is property management. We started about, 5 years ago. And the quick story there is, I started out my career at PwC and Ernst & Young, CPA. Thought I was going to be a partner there. Decided, that's not my track. Went to work for a tech company. And once I did that, my wife and I decided to start doing real estate, as you said, and we'll probably get into that. And so started flipping houses, doing things, got so busy with the real estate, and I was still a W-2, that I outsourced my own accounting. And it just came back really bad. They didn't know what to capitalize versus expense. They didn't know what a closing statement was. They didn't know what closing cost credits were. Blood fist first in cart, but they just did not know what they were doing. Came to the realization, hey, look, every industry has specialists. Who's focused on real estate accounting? There's got to be somebody. Looked online, couldn't really find anybody really focused on that. And that was the genesis for why we started the company. And that was, we started in end of 18, early 19. And now we have, nearly 150 employees. And all we do is accounting for property management companies.
Like we talked about earlier, that's some crazy growth for a short amount of time to get to that many employees, right? So obviously, if you have that many employees, you have enough, clients to have to service, with all those employees. So I guess real quick, give us a little bit about your background of what made you even get into accounting. Did you go to school for that? I know you said you went to Arizona State.
Yeah.
And things like that.
Yeah.
Ended up in Chicago. So
great. It's a great question. So I went to Arizona State, grew up in South Dakota, didn't really know what I was, doing, but I wanted to go to the warm. I had a good business school and I always knew I wanted to get into business. I don't know why. I think some people just think I wanted to make money or whatever I wanted to do. Didn't really know which discipline, but I had two uncles that were accountants and they said, hey, look, you don't know what you want to do in business. Go do it. Study accounting. Go get your CPA. You'll have a designation next to your name that'll help you get a good job. And, the one key thing they told me was like, accounting is the language of business. So, at some level, once you become an executive, at some point you have to understand how to read an income statement, a balance sheet, cash flow statement. I actually think it was really good advice at the time, or in retrospect, I wasn't super excited about accounting, I was always decent at math. And I liked when things kind of fit and work together, and accounting kind of a puzzle. There's usually a right answer. Sometimes there's a couple answers, but more often than not, there's one right answer. I enjoyed it. And that's why I did it.
Okay. That makes sense. So then you went to Arizona State for accounting, or you went for a different major?
No. I went for accounting, and then, mm-hmm. you know, to get your CPA nowadays, you need 150 credit hours in most every state. So I stayed and did a 1-year master's, mm-hmm. Master's of Accounting and Information Systems, and then, you know, took a job at Ernst & Young, got my CPA, and yeah, that was really where I got my start.
Oh, okay. So then you ended up going to PW.
I was at Ernst & Young for a few years. Then I chased a girl up to Chicago. Switched to PwC when I came up here. Did that for a few years. And then I decided, like, I don't want to be in accounting. I kind of want to do something more entrepreneurial. So I joined the tech company and started flipping houses.
Oh, okay. So let's dive into that real fast. So you left PwC. So while you were there, a lot of people that listen to this podcast always want to know, you know, how someone can transition from a W-2 to get into real estate, because they always assume, I don't know. Like, did you grow up with a lot of money to just go out and buy a bunch of real estate? Or did you go get a good job and then build your wealth and buy properties while you were working at PwC? Or how'd that go? Like, how'd that process go for you?
Yeah, definitely did not have a lot of money, to be super clear. You know, I was raised in a very middle-class family, but I took out student loans to go to college and all that good stuff. My parents did pay for some of it. But not to go out of state to Arizona State. They weren't willing to pay for that. So, but I thought it was worth it. But I'll tell you what, when I was, I know it's cliche, but I was reading the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And there was a line in the book that says, why climb the corporate ladder when you can own the ladder? And I was like, I was just cranking at the time. And I read that line and I was like, it just turned me on my head. And I'm just like, oh my gosh. So at that point, you know, that book's all about investing in real estate. Correct. That point, you know, you read so many stories about so much wealth is made in real estate. And so I'm like, I want to get into real estate. And how it really happened was my wife was listening to Pandora that one day. Mm-hmm. And there was one of those ads that said, learn to flip real estate with no money down, mm-hmm. you know, one of those deals. Mm-hmm. And she texted me or called me and was like, hey, you know, right on my walk home from work, hey, there's going to be an event at the Holiday Inn, right on the walk home from work. You've been talking about real estate all the time. There's some free event tonight. Do you want to go? I mean, so she really kind of
got you into
it. Mm-hmm. And go watch this thing. There's, you know, Joe Schmo up on the stage who doesn't look as buttoned up as me, whatever that means, right? Yeah. And he's like, oh, I just made this much money wholesaling a deal. And like, what is wholesale? You know, mm-hmm. And then one thing led to another, and we were like, you know what? Let's try and flip. Let's flip a house. Mm. You know, some things happened in between, but sure enough, found a deal, bought it for $120. It was a hoarder house. Mm. Put a bunch of money into it, but flipped it, and we made about $30,000. Mm. And at that time, it was the most money either of us had ever had, like at one time. You know, we were just W-2 cranking away, getting our small raises, maybe a bonus here and there. And it was like, wow, we get it.
Yeah,
you exactly. know, did it. And this is our money. We're not giving this to anybody. Mm-hmm. You know, we used hard money. We paid all the different things, but we still netted. And from there, we were like, okay, let's do another one. Mm-hmm. And then another one. Mm-hmm. And that was it. But now, luckily, I guess, say on the money side, she lived at home for 2 years mm-hmm. before we moved in together. Mm-hmm. And so she was able to save a good bit of money. So we always joke, like, she funded that first deal, basically. But I was always telling her, look, you know, my value is low today, but my future value is really high.
Yeah, so,
you know, you're betting on me, and my present value is low, or my present value is high. But anyway, yeah, that's kind of how we got going.
So then, just curious, how'd you find that first flip?
Craigslist. Mm. Put an ad out on Craigslist. Wholesaler calls me. He's like, it's a funny story. I was at the Bears game, literally at the Bears game, and it's halftime. It's sort of like pouring in lightning. So they made a fellow go under the stands, go under there. I get a call from this guy and he's like, hey, look, I haven't been able to close this lady, but I know she wants to sell. And here's her information. I talked to him before. He's like, pay me $1,000 if you're able to put this under contract, you know, and I'll give you the information. It was kind of like a handshake deal on the phone. And he gives me the number. I call the lady and she's like, yeah, I'm basically ready to sell. And we literally left. I told my wife, I'm like, we got to go. This is our first great lead.
Yeah.
We left the game. Literally, this true story, drove to her house, pouring out, take a contract in there. I mean, it's sad, but or her house, had her dog going to the bathroom in the house. I mean, yeah. It was wretched.
Yeah,
and she was terrified to go outside.
Mm-hmm.
And bought it for $122,500. I don't know if she had any debt on it. I think her mom had gifted it to her.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we got our first deal. I mean, my wife wouldn't even go inside until it was gutted. It smelled that bad.
Yeah, we've had houses where they go in and there's poop on the wall. Like, so I get it. Yeah.
It was. Yeah. We found like $100 bill buried like when we were doing the trash. I mean, it was like, I forget how many dumpsters, but it was a sad situation, but I think it worked out great. Made the house beautiful and one of these old Chicago brick bungalow, cool building.
Okay. Yeah. So then that was your first deal. You were still obviously working. At what point did you like the light bulb come on? Okay, we made it off this flip. How many flips did you guys do before you felt like you could transition out to doing your own thing?
Well, it's interesting. I never went full time in real estate. We, 2013, we bought our first deal in 13. We sold it in 14. I didn't quit my W-2 until 2020.
Oh, okay.
So I was, towards the end, I negotiated a part time with my boss.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I tell people this all the time too, which is like, if you're a really good employee, they don't want to lose you.
They don't want to lose you.
And so, if you do truly want to take a little risk off the table, but take some risk, see if you can negotiate 2-3 days a week. So that's what I did with them. I said, hey, look, I want to do 2 days a week. I want to get into real estate development. He knew I wanted to get into that.
Mm-hmm.
And he was willing to do that because I had been with him for a long time. And it just so happened that instead of to go on to do real estate development, I ended up starting REA. But like, you know, it was deals and deals, and I wanted to just kind of do it with a little bit of risk because I had a mortgage and kids now. So I was like, look, I need to have something. But I think it's a pretty good way before you just rip the Band-Aid to go all in. I mean, you can go all in, but I did it kind of in a phase.
So to elaborate on what you said, I read a book called 7 Years of Seven Figures. And in that book, it talks about a person having a job, two people that had jobs, and they just leveraged their skill set within the job. I think one guy came up with a newsletter for his company, and that did really well. And then somebody else came up with an idea for a pair of jeans at a fashion company. So they were able to, you know, come up with something. Their value to that company was much greater for them to stay there and work part-time and then do their own thing on the side to get to the point of where they did have his seven figures and they were able to leave or whatever the case was. So I piggyback on what you're saying, like if you're that good, if you add that much value and you can do it at a high level of working 4 hours, 5 hours a day, your employer will be okay with you being able to be like, you know what? As long as you get your work done, right? You can do that. That's like working remote. It's really no different. Your employer has to trust you enough for you to work remote, especially now they can make you come back for some, but that's it's really the same thing. Your boss has let you do it a long time ago. Versus like right now, you know?
Well, it's funny because when I was doing real estate at the W-2, that was before remote. So I was constantly just like ducking into call rooms, ducking into conference rooms. Because when you're doing deals, you know, the architects don't want to talk nights and weekends. They want to talk during business hours.
Correct.
Right. So I'm like, that's always a challenge. But I think being able to do that remote, you could kind of hide that a little bit for sure.
And so one of the things about, which is a great point, I brought that up a couple of years ago when it was like the thing to work remote. You can do a side hustle now a lot easier than you could before. So 100%. I had a similar situation to you. I had a job and we had like a little call room. I was sneaking to that call room and eventually they kind of got on to what I was doing, right? They were like, you know, you're supposed to be over here, but you're in this call room like 2 hours a day at random times. What are you doing in the call room?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
So it's like, it's just so much different. And it's less stressful too when you can work remote because they're not over your back hovering over you. But like you said, I did the same thing. And then when I transitioned out, I had a good amount of money when I transitioned out. You know what I mean?
So then you felt comfortable enough to do it.
Yeah. And then I had deals in my pipeline that were coming in that made it even easier for me to be like, I got this deal closing and this deal closing in like 2 months. You know?
Yeah. It's kind of funny. Everybody kind of knew what I was doing.
Exactly. They know.
But the even better thing was the PwC like a job like that, you got to be all in.
Yeah, yeah.
There's nobody has any other outside interest.
Correct.
When I went to work for this tech company, I had already flipped that first house. So I put at the top of the resume, real estate developer, put PwC underneath that. Mm. And they loved that because they were that small entrepreneurial company. I had the head of sales investing in one of my deals. So I was like pretty open about it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a unique situation, but I'm sure they still didn't love me spending a lot of time at work, working on some other business.
Some other stuff. Yeah. No one likes that because that's obviously time that you're focusing on something else versus making them money. You know what I mean? But it goes back to what you're saying, like on the ladder. You know what I mean?
That's right. Yeah. I think just having a pizza ownership is super important. What's going to take for that? It's pretty addicting.
So at that point in time, because everyone that I know, they like to do real estate flips, right? But then they always get the interest in wanting to do development. How did you transition, or what made you want to transition, which is normal? What made you want to transition into development? Because some people go from regular flipping to commercial. Like they go to 16 units. What made you go to development instead of going a commercial route?
Well, I'll tell you what. Here was the process. We rehabbing houses. Now, our market's unique in that Chicago's a super old city. A lot of the houses were built in the late 1800s, early 1900s. Mm-hmm. So when you go to rehab these houses, like the whole carpet and paint flips,
you can't
do that because all the electrical's clogged. It's radiator heating. These houses are just like
bricks.
The foundations are messed up. Mm-hmm. They're leaning. Mm-hmm. So like even our first couple of flips were like heavy rehabs.
Okay.
So that was part one. And then if you've done enough rehabs, you know that it's like harder to scale. Every house is different. There's a million decisions. Are we going to keep this? Are we not? The architect plans never really measure out exactly what the dimensions are of these houses. So when you're moving walls, things are always smaller than they, were in the plan. Whereas we just knocked down and do new construction. We know exactly what we're doing. There's not a lot of guesswork for the plumber and the electrician. And it's just like, so I thought it was actually less risk to just knock down and do new construction. So that's kind of how we got into doing new construction. But I would say, we did end up kind of doing some commercial deals, bigger than 5-unit deals. And that's really where we bought a 6-unit property, bought it in foreclosure, or it was a short sale, and did the BRRRR strategy. So the 6-unit apartment, there's literally drug dealing going on. They're growing weed in the basement. Like I found a plant, I'm like, guy, can't do this.
What is this? You in the south side of Chicago? Where is this?
No, this was on the northwest side.
Okay.
And, there was a lot of shady characters in this building, but we did cash for keys. We got them out because nobody had leases. Mm. Half the people were paying, but we were able to get them out. And then just turned it into a beautiful property, completely gutted it to the stud. And, by the time we refied it and reappraised it, the new loan we got was, that's the power of, commercial is now you can go get like Fannie Freddie loans that is non-recourse and, it appraised the loan that we got was more than we had invested in the money, in the deal. Mm-hmm. So we got this kind of cash out that was tax-free because it was all debt. Mm-hmm. And that's where the light just kind of went off that we were like, wow, look, single families are kind of great to flip and do this, but like the real money and then buy an apartment building that need a ton of work, gut it, raise the rent, refi, pull out most of your cash, now start getting rental income and do another deal and another deal and another deal.
Ever wished you had the opportunity to buy a stock like Facebook, Amazon, or Netflix before it went public or was able to get shares in companies like VC firms and angel investors? Well, here's your chance. Go to investfar.com/invest and reserve a position. For the next 1 to 3 months, InvestFAR is allowed a limited number of low-cost shares be available for friends, family, and its community per SEC regulations before it goes public. Imagine being able to 1,000x or 10,000x your investment, like the top 5%. With exclusive opportunities such as this, positions are limited and the window of time is short. Don't miss your chance. That's INV, as in Victor, ESTFAR.com/invest.
So what you just explained, like, that's what Grant Cardone does. So
yeah.
The idea that I don't think people get, that's what most rich people do. Like, because that's how you avoid paying taxes. So you hit that's on right. a good point. When you buy a property and you add value and you raise the value and you go do a cash out refinance, another bank is basically buying that property. So you're not really selling it for one. You have this other institution that's buying this loan from you. You know what I mean? So you get the difference. There's really no gain in it per se, because you're not selling it to someone and they're buying it, you're keeping it, right? So you're not really selling it.
There's no gain on the tax return. There's a gain in your bank account. Exactly. It's all that matters. And then as long as you keep 1031-ing it,
correct,
you'll never pay the gain.
You'll never pay the gain, right?
And so that's kind of the name of the game. But kind of the story of development.
Let's one thing I'll say about that too, just because people are listening, like, oh, I want to get in development. He had the background. As a lender, I know you have to have an extensive background of doing a real hardcore rehab. You can't do like a $15,000 rehab and be like, I want to go do new construction. It has to be at least $50,000 or more, which I'm pretty sure your rehabs were like at least $50,000.
That first one was 80.
Exactly. So that's the equivalent. You can go out and build a house for like $80,000 if you go to Georgia and get some land. So that's the equivalent to basically building a new house. So if you're thinking about getting into new development, you have to do extensive rehabs over 50 to 60 grand for it to count toward you having a development experience, which is what he did.
And it's kind of interesting, you know, like when I think about it too, wife and I both had good W-2s. Mm-hmm. So like, even though hard money lenders are asset-based lenders, I think we probably looked like good borrowers, mm-hmm. right? Because we had good credit and W-2s. So then once we did a couple of those deals, then we had a little money. Then we built a website, you know, and a nice looking website that showed past projects. Mm-hmm. And that's really how we were able to transition from hard money to community bank financing and really, mm-hmm. you know, bring our lending from like 12% to 5% mm-hmm. is because, you know, we called this lady, we called a banker at a small bank, you know, mm-hmm. and said our website. She's like, wow, your website looks so professional. I saw your couple of past projects. I think I can get this approved. And that's how we got financing for that six unit. Mm-hmm. And that six unit was a $700,000 rehab.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a very large rehab.
Yeah.
And we got 80% loan to cost on that rehab.
Mm-hmm.
And that was after doing like three heavy rehabs, right? Mm-hmm. 80,000 and then a couple six figure rehabs.
Mm.
But it was mainly a couple projects and a website, and we look legit now.
And again, as a lender, that's one of the first things you ask for. You ask for someone's bio, right? And it's so much better for them to be able to send you a link, because I'm pretty sure your link to your website had your projects, it had your bio, and it had your experience. That's
exactly.
That's just the easy way to go about it. So that's
and then
what
our credit scores were good. And I think it was just like, check.
Correct.
Fairly easy. Low-ish risk.
Mm-hmm.
And thankfully it worked.
So do you mind giving people the website to look at just so they have it as a, or you took it down?
I'm going to
put you on spot.
You know, I'm just like, as I'm telling you before, I don't.
Oh, you transition out. That's right. You guys.
No, you can go. It's still active. I can give it to you as TRI. HOMESTODAY.com. So try homes today. Maybe we can put that in the show notes.
For sure.
But that's the site. The front page is the project that we did back in 2016. So this is all before we started the accounting business. So we thought we were going to be full-time developers. And then we got into this idea of real estate accounting and realized, wow, we really like operating businesses. And we've been full-fledged on this for the last 5 years.
So did you think there was a major benefit in you being able to, with your accounting background, do the numbers on these projects?
100%. 100%. I think, absolutely. I mean, ultimately, all I was living in Excel for the first 7 to 10 years of my career.
Mm.
And when we were doing numbers, you know, it's usually kind of like an Excel model. So we kind of knew. I mean, I think ultimately you don't need to be some finance whiz What you really need to be able to do is buy properties cheap, as you know, but then estimate rehabs pretty well.
Correct.
And having a finance degree doesn't help you without estimating rehabs. Mm-hmm. So that just kind of comes with experience, I think. But yeah, I always felt, I felt more confident kind of putting together financial packages for banks, because they always say, like, send us your underwriting and send us your comps. And so I felt good about like doing due diligence on comps and price per foot, just feeling comfortable with the financial piece of it. Mm-hmm. And because too, on all of our deals, we raised money from investors, you know, we had the debt, but then we had to come up with quite a bit of equity and we didn't have all that cash. Right. So we had to put together a pro forma, something that looked professional for investors. And I think having a financial background helped.
So then we'll go two places with this, which you, cause we just had, we have people coming on about raising funds and syndication. So to help out some of the listeners, where did you source those people for your syndications?
Yeah. So that first ever hard money deal we did, he brought the equity guy. He's like, hey, I'll do the, he was a really entrepreneurial guy. He's like, I got a fund that'll do the loan. And I got a few guys that would invest in the deal as equity. Okay. It was like the easy button. We paid them an absurd return in hindsight, but like,
of course,
that's how we got the game.
Yeah.
And then after that, it was really friends and family. Okay. And I think part of that was, again, we were rubbing shoulders with some pretty financially successful people, being at PwC and then going to the tech company. Like I said, the head of sales, he was fine stroking a check for 50K because that was just, you know what I mean? Like, he was an entrepreneurial guy. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of just had some people in our sphere at that point that could help fund us.
So then that's what made you start REA, right? Because you hadn't started it yet. You went and did all these real estate deals. And then you were like, because that's the part. You try to, you do all these deals, right? How do you keep that money? Because capital gains tax are what, 37%?
20% and 25, I think now.
Okay, okay. So then, so you do make that money. Now the idea is how to keep it. So like he said, the refinance is the way to keep it. Learning how to do depreciation and all these other things. So like this is the stuff that you were figuring out, right? Obviously, as you were doing deals, you having your accounting background, and then you looking online for someone who had a real estate accounting background. Is that what led you to do REA and be like, you know what? I know all this stuff. I know other people out there like me. So go into that a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, the biggest thing is just like, we have the problem. Yes, I was an accountant, but now I'm a real estate guy and I need my accounting done. And I tried having somebody do it and it came back very poorly. Mm-hmm. And so now it's like, okay, who does it really well? Couldn't find anybody that did it really well. So we were like, hey, let's get a website and start advertising and see if we can get some leads and see if there's an opportunity there. And it turned up to be a big opportunity. But, you know, I think I always tell people the best accountants are people that really understand the industry and the product, not just somebody that knows how to do debit and credit, but somebody that really gets it. And we've syndicated. We've raised money. We've sold deals. We've done bank draws. We've done negotiations. We've done 1031. We've done consent. We've done, you know, like ourselves, we've done it. Mm-hmm. So when we're our clients doing these things, it's not just like a concept we've read about online or in a book. Mm-hmm. It's we've actually done it.
Yeah.
And so I think roughly 60% of our clients both own the real estate and manage it. Mm-hmm. And that's because, you know, we are owner operators. We've done it. So they're kind of, we've been in their shoes, maybe at a smaller scale, but it's more relatable. And yeah, we know the industry and both sides of it, both business and the accounting piece.
And so it's like, what he's saying is like, if you get an attorney to try to handle a real estate transaction, it's okay. It's not going to go as well as you getting a real estate attorney to handle a real estate transaction. So like, if you go to a CPA, who's just a regular CPA, he's not going to be able to get you as much money back as you go into a real estate accountant. Like, it's just not, because he doesn't know what to put or what depreciation or all these different. He can look at a book and say, based on this, or he can look at a code, but you're going to know exactly, because you still might have your own deals. You told me you have a development deal you're working on. So you're still active and what's going on in the market, you know?
Yeah, yeah. We're building 4 townhomes in a qualified opportunity zone. So that's another thing we're
exactly.
down in Tampa at the moment. Yeah. But, you know, when you work at Ernst & Young and PwC, they have a specialist for everything. There's an oil and gas specialist, media entertainment, real estate. And there's a reason for that, because kind of like you're saying, it's the same. Every industry has really unique issues.
Correct.
And the tax code, if it was a book, it would probably be this thick.
Massive.
Right. Yep. And you can't know everything well. And the real estate guys are focused on the few things that affect everybody. And
Correct. Yeah,
people like to work with specialists, and it makes sense.
So then with you guys, since you guys do have the background, when you go to your website, which I'll get that at the end, but when you go to your website, is there a way for people to get a consultation or just say, hey, you guys do more than just real estate accounting? Will you give me advice on some deals? Like what does REA do outside of just accounting, or is it strictly books?
Pretty much strictly books.
Okay.
You know, if you want us to talk to you about that, you go to our website, we'll put that in the show notes. It's actually just REA.co. We used to have realestateaccounting.co and people kept misspelling it. Mm-hmm. So we went and bought REA.co from some guy that had bought it. So we had to pay him for it, but that, you know, side note. But yeah, there's a green button on the website that says contact us. You can go in there, book a meeting, be happy to chat with you and see if we're a good fit.
And I'm pretty sure the pricing is favorable. So, you're not like obviously day to day, you guys have 150 employees. So when the people come through, you get a consultant, are the accountants going to give information like, hey, you guys should do this to save more money here? Or do you guys just take it upon yourself to structure that to where the person gets the most money back?
So we don't do tax returns. We do the bookkeeping.
Correct.
So we, you know, our real bread and butter is property management company. They're collecting a bunch of rent. You charge rent, you collect rent, you pay bills, distribute checks to owners, and you deliver financial statements so that investors are comfortable that, you know, they can see the numbers or banks can see the numbers. And at the end of the year, we give it to the tax CPA to file, do the K-1s.
Got it.
So, you know, we are not necessarily saying, we might have a point of view with them to say, hey, look, instead of capitalizing the cost, let's run it through repairs and maintenance.
Correct.
And which is going to lower your tax liability. But our is, you know, we are property management companies have two options. Somebody told us the other day, property management companies are glorified bookkeepers because so much of it is just bookkeeping. And they have two options. They can hire an accountant in-house and pay W-2 and pay self-employment and FICA and all those different things. Or they can outsource it to a group like ours, the 1099. There's no payroll taxes. You can kind of scale up and down as you see fit. A lot of people don't need a full-time accountant. They need a fractional accountant. Mm-hmm. And that's in effect what we provide is fractional bookkeeping services for property management companies.
Good, good, good. And then you guys can do forensic auditing and things like that.
We don't do a ton of auditing, but, you know, I was an auditor back in the day and I like your clear audit.
Which makes sense. It's a headache.
Yeah.
It's a headache.
Yeah.
I'm doing a forensic audit right now. That's why I was curious, like, if you guys do it.
Not really our bread and butter.
That's cool. So, you know, any advice you can give the listeners on, like, what they could do to transition from W-2? I know you gave the advice on, like, being good at your job, first of all, right? And then leveraging your skill set and being good at your job to being able to go part-time. Do you have any kind of books outside of, you know, Rich Dad, Poor Dad or podcasts that you listen to that kind of got you on the path? I know, I'm curious about this. Who was the guy that you went and saw to get started in real estate? Do you remember his name?
I don't remember his name.
Okay. I was just curious.
There's
so many, but yeah, I mean, I did the same thing. So that's why I was like, what if it was the same guy?
I don't remember.
Okay.
You know, books, I read so many books. I just listened to Elon Musk's book that's not going to motivate you to do real estate, but it's going to motivate you to think a lot bigger.
Yeah.
The E-Myth was a great book and got recommended to me.
Yeah.
And that was a big reason I outsourced my own accounting. And it was all about focus on what drives revenue and outsource the admin.
Mm.
And that was an eye-opening one. Yeah, I love all sorts of help self-help books like Think and Grow Rich, all the classics. I'm a voracious reader, but I think, you know, ultimately you got to go out there and you got to buy a deal and you got to do a deal and you got to start going to RIA events, start meeting the wholesalers and just start talking to people. And I think based on what I did, you can do it on the side and de-risk. And yes, it's going to be busy. I started before I had kids, but even if you have kids, it's just another thing you got to work around. But I think if you're hungry and you're super dedicated, it's just all about like, how bad do you want it? If you want it bad enough, you'll wake up early and you'll work late to underwrite deals and, you know, go buy something eventually.
It, in my opinion, like you said, it all comes down to, you obviously have to be in the right mindset. You know what I mean? At the end of the day, did you have a fear when you first jumped out with, or you were like, you know what? Okay.
Great. Tons of fear. But the discussion I had with my wife was, hey, look, if this totally fails, I can always go back to public accounting. These accounting firms have been around forever. You know, they all are growing and need people. And even if the firm that I left says, you know, or like resent me for leaving or something, which they didn't, I don't think, but like there's plenty of others that would be like, oh, we'd love to have an experienced guy to come back in. So I saw it as kind of risky, but not really.
So guys, like he says, he gave you a bunch of tips that a lot of our guests come on here and give. So it would be in your best interest to, I always talk about going to seminars because you learn so much from those seminars. It just leads you into I'm pretty sure you're a lifelong learner, like most people that are entrepreneurs, right? You just kind of got to be in there. You're always reading books. That's the thing. Like, education is the key. That's completely what it is, right? He got into a space that he never knew. He was an accountant who just went to a seminar and now he's full blown into real estate with accounting, right? So he can do both at the same time. It's not going to be that hard. That kind of goes like what I always say. Like, if you know something, stick with that, right? And then like you did, you pivoted from accounting, but you're still doing accounting with real estate and you're doing both at the same time.
Yeah, and I literally got back from a seminar last night. Mm-hmm. I still do all this stuff. So correct. I'm in a mastermind now. I was down in Georgia from Monday to Thursday. Mm-hmm. Like last Wednesday, I got to hear Tim Grover speak. What? He's the guy that trained Jordan and trained Kobe. Yeah. And I'm sitting front row listening to this guy. And I'm just like, I'm just jacked up right now because I'm coming out of the high of this event. I still got all this stuff. I think it's all about his whole thing was mindset.
Right.
And what you said just kind of resonated with me. He's just like, he made this comment. Like, you think Jordan was just interested in winning championships? He was like, he was obsessed.
Kobe.
He wasn't just
obsessed.
Interested.
Correct.
And he was like, another thing that was kind of funny, he's like, first time he met Jordan hired him. Jordan's like, you better keep up. That was the first thing he said.
Yeah, I remember that.
That's what he told him. He's like, you better be able to keep up with me.
Yeah.
And he was like, this wasn't just like working out, just like his whole life. You better be able to keep up because I'm going places. So it was, to your point, I'm still going to seminars.
Yeah.
I'm still learning. Yep. Because it gets you fired up. You learn something new every time. And then you're around a bunch of people that are super motivated and want to do the same thing. So
it's the energy and being around like minds.
Yep. It was energizing.
Yep. I wrote a book called Epitome of the Mind. And it talks about that. It's like anybody like you or anybody that's made it to a very high level, they were obsessed. It was a healthy obsession. But it's and some people would be like, okay, obsessed is like, it's just highly focused. It's basically what it is. You know what I mean? But obsessed might be like a strong word, but it's just a person that's highly focused that nothing's going to stop them from reaching whatever that goal is. And that's just kind of what it is. Like, you can sit here and be like, this is holding me back. This is this. But even with all these barriers, a highly, you know, motivated person or a highly focused person, it's not going to stop them, right? At all.
Whatsoever. That was his whole thing. So what else they say? Like, the road to paradise starts in hell. he had so many good one-liners. So anyway, that was really fun.
Man, Mark, thank you for coming on, man. Got to have you back.
Thanks so much for having me, Andre.
We do something called Investing Into the Roundtable where we bring on a lot of guests. You know what I mean? We talk about real estate and talk about different things going on in the economy. So it'd be great to have you on because, again,
love to.
You know, bringing on people like-minded to get that energy just feeds and it keeps it going.
Please, just let me know.
All right, Mark, thank you for coming on.
All right, thanks.